There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that.
This is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby. That's right. This man knows what's up.
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
And here we go, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile, hour number two on this Wednesday. Glad to have y'all along. Phone number and the text line, 343-0106, 343-0106. And we'll get back to some of these texts here in a little bit. I will answer this one from Joshua, or just read it. It says, so University of Alabama and the University of South Alabama both had a Solomons. That's pretty cool. It is, yeah. So I was familiar with the Solomons here growing up, not far. Could ride the old BMX bike over there to the one here in Mobile growing up, and then arrived in Tuscaloosa, and for a while there we had Solomons and the varsity. And but yeah, that last hour, y'all, we talked about times gone by, and somebody had Scrollverine had texted in, somebody who knew where I started my radio career on the college station, and it went from there. All right, without further ado, you know her, you love her, the crowd goes wild. Erica Thomas from 1819 News, how you?
Howdy, Sean. I'm doing well. Just, you know, working away. How are you?
I'm good. I watching, and I don't know what the how many views the video has had, and you have it embedded in one of your stories of the toll plaza coming down at for the Beach Express. What worried me looking at it, not worried, but I know they had taken out the supports underneath. But how quickly, with just a push on that track hoe, that whole roof just came down one section, like boom, just nudge and then down.
You're right, though. They did take a lot of the supports out. They worked on it about 3 days ahead of time, you know, to get it ready to take that canopy down. Obviously, with the winds that thing's taken, if there was anything to worry about, we would have been in trouble a long time ago. So.
Yeah. Yep, it came, obviously it was built well. I do think if Governor Ivey wasn't term limited, now it doesn't matter, but if she wasn't term limited, I would have had her out there filming a commercial for the next gubernatorial cycle, like, I did this, and I'm smashing tolls or something like that. I'm out here with a hard hat on or something like that. You know how the fancies like to do, dress up like they're working the job.
There's no canopy too high for a hospital.
And then you look like the shot goes to the canopy coming down, and then they do the close up, and it's her inside the track hoe.
No, she's like walking out of the smoke that's like all over the place in slow motion.
Nice.
With like the Mission Impossible music in the background. Yes.
See, I mean, if future political hopefuls just hire Erica and I. We'll put your commercials together. They will be great.
They will be talked about for sure.
Yes. Like, and in a state where we've had some political commercials that are of note, we would be of note. Yes. Now it's down. Now the second question is all the splitting of the road and the all northbound and all southbound stuff. When the new what is the timeline on that? So you got to get the new bridge finished, or what do we do here?
We're looking at 18 months on that bridge, the new bridge that really the start of all of this happened when they decided to build the new bridge. It's like a mile away from the toll bridge, the former toll bridge. And so we're still looking at about 18 months of that. And now we have I don't know if you've heard or not, but apparently the hurricane season is expected to be pretty rough this year.
Yeah.
I think we're going to have to watch that too. And you know how storms will just, even if they don't mess up anything, they can still put people that work outside out of business for a little bit. So we'll see how that goes. When they say 18 months, I always say...
Double,
you know, 24 months.
Yeah, or just double things, and you're usually on, spot on.
Yes. there's always going to be a delay. We've got supply chain issues still going on. It's not as talked about as it was, you know, the last couple of years, but that's still an issue. And there's different reasons why some materials may not be available, or they might be more expensive. So you just never know. But this whole northbound, southbound thing will not be an issue until that bridge is done, obviously.
But are they going to be working on the roadways, though, that, like, connect that? I mean, there's going to be some onshore work done, right?
Yes. They actually have to build a road to go from the old bridge to the new bridge on the north side of the canal. And that's a lot of wetland right there. So there's actually going to be two more small bridges that are going to have to be built in between that. Which a lot of people hadn't really talked about that, but this is going to be a long project. But even those two bridges that are smaller, they're on the same timeline as that big bridge, the new one going over the intercoastal. So this should all be completed at the same time.
All right. So onward and upward, we'll be talking about this story for at least 2 years. So that we'll have.
And just when I thought the bridge stories were over, they just keep on coming.
That's right. Then one that has been a new perennial, if that's possible, and that is the goings-on with the Mobile City Government, City Council, the firing of Chief Prine, and people addressing. Now, I talked about this some on yesterday's show. You have a full story. Send in the clowns. Prine supporters address the joke of a decision not to issue subpoenas to city officials. That was the best. The picture you have there is the best, because I was watching the video and all the different clown costumes. You have the woman in the multicolored clown wig coming to the mic. So what was the clown show? Yes. What was the discussion of the clown show?
Well, the point of these Paul Prine supporters is to say, this is a circus, you know, so they dressed the part. They did a good job at getting their points across. They ended up getting kicked out of the meeting at one point. Well, they got escorted out, but they are very passionate. They're supporting Paul Prine through this entire process. So we finally get to this investigation where we're saying we're going to finally see the truth. The truth is going to come out because we've got this investigated firm out of Birmingham. And this is a nationwide investigation, like a law firm that's nationwide. But they started in Birmingham. They've made a name for themselves. They're really good at what they do. And they do these kind of things, you know, with municipal investigations and situations. They look into these things. They know what they're doing. So we thought, well, this is going to be objective. There's no connection with the city of Mobile. But already, I mean, they have already talked to Paul Prine himself. He talked to one of the investigators, one of the attorneys, Bill Athenas. And you know, that's already done. But this is just at the beginning of this investigation. The city council has subpoena powers through the Zogby Act. What they were going to do was approve the subpoenas for each individual. We're not talking about documents. We're not talking about emails and texts. We're talking about individuals to subpoena them to speak with investigators.
Yeah, like an interview, right? To be able to question them. Yeah.
Right. And so the subpoena, the point in that is to compel them to come forward and talk to investigators. Because without that, you know, they just might not want to. And so the whole purpose of it is to compel them to come forward. And if they don't, there are, they could face charges, misdemeanor charges for not coming forward and not complying with a subpoena.
Now,
because, like I said, the city council does have that power.
Yeah, and they handed. I've talked about this several times, and maybe there's some legal can tell me why I'm wrong. But if we, the citizens of Mobile, are spending $300,000 on this, shouldn't we ask every question that needs asked? I'm worried about that. I think to do this half cocked, and then come back and say, well, we hear the investigation's done, and then people like me going, well, you didn't talk to these people. It's just a setup for failure going forward.
Well, and that's the important part for this investigation, for the investigators to be aware of who all the players are Because there are even people that don't work for the city but have connections with the city that need to be interviewed, that have connections with this investigation. They might be able to, you know, offer some information that maybe nobody's heard yet. And so it is important to have the subpoenas. Now, you'll remember Mayor Stinson does not feel comfortable with these subpoenas. And the reason for that is because he doesn't want it to appear like people who work for the city have done something wrong, because he believes that issuing a subpoena to one of those people would make them, you know, feel like there's a legal issue here, that they've done something wrong. A lot of people disagree with that. These people in the clown outfit say, you know what, if everybody else gets a subpoena, then everyone that works for the city also needs to get one. That's only fair. You're already starting out this investigation unfair if you know there's some people that don't have to be subpoenaed. That's their opinion on this. And so the Bradley firm, that's going to be their responsibility to make sure they're able to talk to everyone. And as it stands right now, the city council still has that power to be able to approve these subpoenas if the Bradley firm says, hey, I was really wanting to talk to so-and-so with the city and they're not doing it. Because as it stands right now, the city administration confirmed that every person that this firm wants to speak to is willing to cooperate at this time.
So, but it once again, they have to individually say that as a council, because we had talked about that before. The council can't say, here's our subpoena power, we give it to the law firm. Right? They have to go through the council for each subpoena.
They have to approve a list. What they had before was a list of people that needed to be subpoenaed, that they needed to speak to. And I think the only ones that they said at the end they were going to have were people that were outside of city administration. And this is after the letter from Stinson that went to all the council members asking them to not approve subpoenas for city administrators. So that would have been Paul Prine and then the Insights group. They would have gotten subpoenas. And now, Paul Prine did get a subpoena. He got one.
Yeah, and was that by mistake? I mean, kind of going through this story last week, it was like, they had sent it before the council voted, like somebody had an early golf game or something and sent it out? Or,
well, yeah. So part of the issue with this law firm having to go back and get approval for every subpoena every time is by the time the council meets again a week later, they needed to have already talked to that person or interviewed that person for the investigation. So that was one of the complaints was, you know, if you got to come back and do this every single time, this was going to take a lot longer than 45 days. That all made sense. But they apparently, and I've asked the city, was this an accident that Paul Prine got the subpoena, or was this a draft subpoena, as one report stated? And I haven't heard back from that. All I know is that subpoena was not approved by the council at that time.
All right. Well, we'll hopefully get more reporting on this from you, and that'll happen, well, maybe even before next week. Is that a tease?
I think there will be a lot more to come, yes, on 1819news.com.
All right. Very good. Did you get to go? By the way, as we wrap up here, have you gone floundering again since a couple weeks ago? Have you gotten to go?
I haven't. The weather really, it was really good for it last weekend, but I didn't get to go. And so hopefully, after these storms come through, I'll be able to go again.
All right.
I'll let you know.
Yeah, keep me in the loop. Erica, thank you. We'll talk again next week.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. There's Erica Thomas, 1819 News, and we'll be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Wednesday. Big thank you to Erica. Let's see here. Okay, Dirt Digger says, if we could get a fast cruise ship to Tuscaloosa from Mobile, we need a fast food restaurant on it by Taco Casa. Tell Jeff that, Sean. If Jeff's listening, yes, the Taco Casa onboard dining. Dave from Gulf Shores. Juneteenth happened in Galveston, Texas. Galveston, Texas is named for Bernardo de Galvez. He had slaves in his American Revolutionary War Army fighting for our rights against the British. For George Washington, they couldn't enjoy. Spanish Fort is a Spanish fort built by Bernardo de Galvez. That's your local tie to Juneteenth. It's all around us if you just happen to know a little bit about the history. Yeah, and Dave, adding to that, the General Canby angle, right? So, yes, to Juneteenth. But we do, and I appreciate that, we do love our local history on these. Superbomb, off topic. Okay, well, off topic. Off topic, did you hear Biden's team is trying to renegotiate that Biden should be allowed to sit for the upcoming debate on the 27th? I did. I heard that yesterday, Superbomb, that it was going to be seated, right? It looks like Biden's team doesn't believe that he's capable of standing for the 90 minutes. I think Trump should just stand the whole time, regardless, and a show of strength. Yeah, that would do something. Do one of those moves where you go, no, come here, let me get your chair for you. Yeah, let me get your chair for you. Ben asks, issuing a what? Subpoenas. Ben, subpoenas. Now, the closed captioning, as I talked about yesterday, doesn't see it the same way. I put those screenshots up on the Twitter feed at FM Talk 1065. You can check them out there. When Sabrina Mask was talking about plural of subpoenas, and because I am perpetually 12 years old, it amused me enough that I took the screenshots of what the closed captioning on YouTube thought she was saying. And you can see those over there. All right. Well, this is, let me get my note to myself here. I wrote, this is not a great thing. It's my hot headline for this story coming out today. Russia and North Korea sign a partnership deal that appears to be the strongest since the Cold War. Yeah, this is not a great thing. AP reporting Russian President Vladimir Putin and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un signed an agreement today that pledges mutual aid if either country faces aggression. That's in quotes. A strategic pact that comes as both face escalating standoffs with the West. Details of the deal were not immediately clear, I can imagine, but it would mark the strongest connection between Moscow and Pyongyang since the end of the Cold War. Both leaders described it as a major upgrade of their relations, covering security, trade, investment, cultural, and humanitarian ties. Okay, humanitarian ties between the two. Y'all, this is about missiles. This is about Russia needing North Korean technology. Can you believe that? That's where they're going for it. The summit came as Putin visited North Korea for the first time in 24 years, and the U.S. and its allies expressed growing concerns over possible arms arrangement in which Pyongyang provides Moscow with badly needed munitions for its war in Ukraine in exchange for economic assistance and technology transfers that could enhance the threat posed by Kim's nuclear weapons and missile program. So here's one of my takeaways from this. If they have a mutual aid pact, and let's say something pops off on the peninsula. Remember, you've got the trash balloons and other thing balloons, which, like I said, if that's the extent of their battling in the Korean Peninsula, that's good. The North Koreans are drifting these balloons over the border of the DMZ into the south with trash in them that's hitting South Korea. South Korea is returning the favor. I think they've got speakers there along the DMZ, and they're playing like K-pop music and broadcasting freedom messages or whatever. Into North Korea. So that's their battle. But think about that. Well, you just have an armistice there, right? And a DMZ. This is another proxy war situation that could bring the United States in. If Russia has pledged this mutual aid, and say the war pops off in the peninsula, and now it's not just the Chinese, I guess it would be the Russians aiding the North Koreans, and of course, United States and other allies, but U.S. mostly, backing the South Koreans. There, you know, when you move one piece on the board, you move other pieces, right? I mean, it's a situation in Ukraine. The things leading up to the Russian invasion of Ukraine, and I'm still in that world where I don't believe the Ukrainian government is all good and everything was perfect. I don't, because that's not factual. Same time, I understand Ukrainian people wanting to say, nah, I want to stay Ukrainian. I'm going to fight y'all. I don't think, like I said since the beginning, there's no way for them to win this. I wish we'd find a road to peace there, which nobody seems to be interested in Washington. But you move one piece and you move others. So as you've moved against shutting down, sanctioning Russia and all these things, they're going to find other friends to play with, right? Now selling well more and entrenching a commercial ally with India and China because Russia's feeding them oil. And then in this case, they're looking to North Korea for munitions, strengthening that relationship. I don't think it's a great thing. Coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 135 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Check in with my man at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry, Ron, with an update here. It's been quite a story as of late with gold and silver. Maybe you can clue me in on platinum and palladium. As you said, it's been a healthy. Am I using the right word? Like the way the growth pattern's been is healthy in these precious metals.
Yes, sir. And nobody wants to see it just keep running up because people kind of take a step back and try to figure out if they can time the market or when's the best time to do it. And healthy increases and with minor corrections is what you would expect to see and hope to see. You never want to see anything just keep doing a running up. If it runs up fast, it usually runs down just as fast.
Okay. So it kind of makes sense. You look at it like you would equities out there. Sir. And then you've pointed out, too, that you feel like precious metals is part of a portfolio. It's not the whole thing, but it's part of a portfolio, same as equities and other cash.
Yeah, cash, equity, stocks. You want to mix all that stuff up. You never want to have all your eggs in one basket.
All right. Get that education on gold and silver. You also have introduced us here in the last year or two, not that it was new to you, but now we're all paying attention to platinum and palladium, which you said another thing that moves that is the automotive industry that moves those prices.
Yes, and hopefully we have some correction on the interest rates that the Fed sets, and that'll help sell the cars, and usually that causes the palladium and platinum markets to react positively and then do an increase on it. Right now, of course, with interest rates, a lot of car sales are down, and that's to be expected. Nobody wants to pay 8 or 9% on a car loan.
Right, but if people are trying to figure out, you know, like investing too, I mean, the what's next portion of it, that does come back, like all things do come back, and that they need this platinum and palladium to put into these catalytic converters, more cars, more catalytic converters, more sales for those precious metals.
Yes, sir. So, I mean, I always ask people or, you know, try to convince people to put some of that, those two metals, in their portfolio, in their hedge, and then round it out with gold and silver. And that way you don't have all your hedge eggs in one basket either. If gold makes a run up or platinum makes a run up, and you have some. You have some you can benefit on, maybe cash it in and keep the other stuff going. So, just be diversified, come in. We'll give you a quick class on how to, when you're viewing things, to ascertain whether something you're looking at is real, if it's counterfeit, whether it's something somebody's trying to take advantage of you. We can give you all that learnage. Come in and we'll do some training on you, no charge.
No, it's been a heck of an education I've received from you over the years. And you mentioned something. I do want to stop for a second because you mentioned if something's real or not. And it's been a few months ago, but you and I talked about it, a bad story around here. People were buying what they thought was gold online. And they weren't getting gold. I mean, this is
silver too. You got to be careful if you're on Facebook Marketplace or Instagram. Make sure you try to prove out who you're dealing with, because if you see somebody selling silver online for $15 an ounce, chances of it being real are you have a better chance of winning the lottery than that item being real. So don't throw your money away, because we had a guy that bought 100 of them, brought them in, and all 100 were fake, and that company is gone. They just kind of drift around, take people's money, and start up under a different name. So if it's too good to be true, it's too good to be true.
Well said. All right. Let's talk about what's true. Where do people find you and get this education and check out everything going on in the store?
Midtown Mobile, 2204 Government Street. Come by the shop and say hey. Like you mentioned, our phone number 251-725-5090, or check us out on the web, mobilebaycoins.com.
Hey, thanks, Ron.
You're welcome, Sean.
All right, there he goes, Ron at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Get a couple texts here. They got more stories for you. Lawrence in Mobile says the Biden sitting during the debate story is from the Republican Party, not from the Biden team. So is it? So is that? So he's not. So because Supermom said Biden's team's trying to renegotiate that Biden be allowed to sit, and you're saying that came from the Republicans. Okay. Well, I have to dig into it, Lawrence. Is it? It's not like yesterday with the cheap fake, deep fake stuff, is it? I mean, what's true? I don't know. I don't think that they would. I mean, I think they would be savvy enough, Lawrence, to know what the optics of that would be, right? If both men weren't sitting, it's like Donald Trump is in a straitjacket, and then Biden gets to be suspended from wires like people doing the Peter Pan play, and gets to fly around the stage. It'd be a little better. Let's see here. Let's see. Joel says $3.4 billion for roads and bridges just for Wisconsin. That is amazing. He's definitely trying to buy votes, and we can't hold to get funding for a major bridge that needs to be put in place. Oh, the Biden's doing that? You saw that on Fox News. $3.4 billion for roads and bridges in Wisconsin. I got to look that up. Let's see. Joe, I can't read that. Come on now. It's funny, but I'm not going to do that one on there. All right, and we'll get to some more text here in a little bit, but I do want to run a couple more stories here and get your take on them at 343-0106. The one that, I guess, earlier this week, maybe it was Monday, that came out, that the U.S. Surgeon General, and I've had this story pulled since then, but I just finally got a second here. U.S. Surgeon General has called on Congress to require warning labels on social media platforms and their effects on young people's lives, similar to those warnings on that are mandatory on cigarette boxes. This from the AP. It said in a Monday opinion piece in the New York Times, Dr. Vivek Murthy said that social media is a contributing factor in the mental health crisis among young people. His quote here, it is time to require a Surgeon General's warning label on social media platforms, stating that social media is associated with significant mental health harms for adolescents. A Surgeon General's warning label, which requires congressional action, would regularly remind parents and adolescents that social media has not been proved safe. Evidence from tobacco studies show that warning labels can increase awareness and change behavior. Look at it two ways. I mean, the cynic in me says, what is that going to change? I mean, the parents don't think it's the greatest thing, but it just, the kids are doing it. I don't think parents go, here, child, I want to make sure you get on social media, unless you're some kind of like crazy cheer mom or something that ends up on one of those ID channel things. That'd be the only people I would think that would be like, hey, no, you need to get some. Have y'all been on social media today? Y'all stop that homework and get on social media. But maybe with putting that Surgeon General's warning on there on a thing, has there ever been a Surgeon General's warning on something in media? Because would you put that on movies? I mean, we already have like rated R, you know, movies or whatever. Would you run a Surgeon General's warning like watching John Wick could lead to, you know, overdose of how many people were killed in one movie or something? I don't know. So Murthy said that the use of a warning label wouldn't make social media safe for young people, but it would be part of the steps needed. So that's plural, right? Steps. He goes on to say, Josh Golan, executive director at Fairplay, an organization that's dedicated to ending marketing to children, said social media today is like tobacco decades ago. It's a product whose business model depends on addicting kids. And as with cigarettes, the Surgeon General's warning label is a critical step towards mitigating the threat to children. I wonder if it would work. I mean, I try to be open-minded here. Maybe for some people... Is there anybody who has their kids? My youngest, I don't think, does, but he's on everything else online. Lord knows if there's a game to play online, but my daughter, for sure, on all kinds of social media. I don't think it's the best thing. I didn't introduce, but she's old enough now; she can make her own decisions. But are there parents out there, as a parent, that we don't know that this isn't a great thing? I mean, if you want to go through the process, but it's. do parents not know that it's not a great thing and it can be addictive? Would having a having a Surgeon General's warning, like when you open up whatever platform beforehand, make you change behaviors? It says here in the story from the AP, actually getting the labels on social media platforms would take congressional action, and it's not clear how quickly that might happen, even with the apparent bipartisan unity around child safety online. Lawmakers have held multiple congressional hearings on child online safety, and there's legislation in the works. Still, the last federal law aimed at protecting children online was enacted in 1998, 6 years before Facebook's founding. Do you think they go from this next to say, if they get something passed, then they'll say, it's also not good for adults either? Because I don't think it's the best thing. I mean, it depends on how you use it. There's a lot of things, technology-wise and social media-wise, I think are great things. But there are a lot of them, they're not. But what if, you know, we've got a federal government that's trying to shut down TikTok because of fears of Chinese spying. Or is it that it's a way to get information out about people in power faster? You make the call. Goes on to say, to comply with federal regulation, social media companies already ban kids under 13 from signing up on their platforms, but children haven't been shown to easily get around the bans, both with and without their parents' consent. Of course, I said every time government makes a move, the free market or the kids figure out a way around it. There are all kinds of things that we weren't supposed to do as kids that we found a way around it. Said other measures social platforms have taken to address concerns about children's mental health can also be easily circumvented. For instance, TikTok introduced a default 60-minute time limit for users under 18. But once the limit is reached, minors can simply enter a passcode to keep watching. So there is it time for a Surgeon General's warning on social media? And by the way, Lawrence, Supermom just got back with me. She probably was online. She said, I just looked it up. The comment about Biden came from an AP article. And is the AP right-leaning? So, Lawrence, there you go. There's the answer from Supermom on the Biden sitting story. And we'll be right back to sow more discontent or something like that.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Look, they've got the TV reporters standing in water as the tropical storm warning in effect for the Texas coast. It's the dream of TV reporters everywhere to go stand in the water. If there's flooding stories or storm surge stories, you can't do your report, even though they might be just 5 or 6 feet from actual dry land where the camera person is. They go stand in the water because I did do television courses at the University of Alabama, but we did not, I did not get any courses on how to stand in water and do your stand-up report, but obviously people have trained in that, and they all do the same thing. They all wear some logoed rain gear and go stand in the water. We'll get a bunch of that over the next day or so here out of Texas. All right, this segment of the show brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK. That is my buddy Trey, Trey Bennett with 1-800-GOT-JUNK. And his story is, you know, kind of like our story, locally owned business. He started probably a year, year and a half before we did here. But he's getting rid of junk in Mobile and Baldwin counties and getting junk out of houses, storage units, backyards, shops, businesses, wherever. You got stuff that's in your way, junk you want out of your life. It helps move a project along. It helps open up space in the house. It makes organizing a lot easier. And get my man Trey to do the work for you. And it's a great, great service because it's one that deals on your schedule, not theirs, which is obviously, if you've heard me over time, is a frustration of mine in the service world where you got to work around their schedule. You get online, pick up the phone, you set the appointment. You find the day that works for you, the time that works for you, set the appointment. They show up, you're there. All you got to do at that point is point at the stuff you want them to take away, the junk you want gone. They quote you a price right there on the spot. If you say yes, they get to work right then and get it done. I've done it personally. I've done it with this radio station. Several of us have here. And if you go look at the Google reviews, hundreds of your neighbors, friends, family have done the same thing. So you got junk you need gone, use my friend Trey with 1-800-GOT-JUNK online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. This, and hopefully we'll talk some about this story tomorrow with Dale Leash. Now, it's Scott Johnson's story over at LandNetMobile.com, but maybe Dale can chime in a little bit. But this is something we addressed in a kind of a sideways fashion on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. So that's a show that that you hear Saturday mornings. Mike Ward and I do that show, and then it runs throughout the weekend as well. And we started discussing just one of our segments about jubilees and the law. And when you're at a jubilee, you still have to comply with state law on size, length restrictions, creel limits, those kind of things. All the, and you have to have a saltwater fishing license. So that's been the story for quite a while. I think, over the last, I'd say probably decade, they've really started enforcing that. And then, so we talked about that because there were, I know, some citations written last week. I had a couple of jubilees. Like I knew, laying in bed, I think it was Wednesday morning or something, my phone started blowing up with people on the Eastern Shore sending me pictures. I'm like, well, too little, too late. But this story from Lanyap is about one of the, beyond the citation, this is an arrest. Scott Johnson has a story over at lanyapmobile.com. Headline, all for a damn flounder. Citations, arrest, damper the first jubilee of the year with controversy. So in this story, and they go into the discussion of jubilees, we do enough here already, but he said, this is the story of Vincent Wasp, who they said took an impromptu trip out to Zundel Road Bay Access last Wednesday. He thought he had scored a Father's Day fish fry. Instead, the year's first jubilee ended up with him behind bars, nursing a dislocated shoulder and facing multiple charges and slapped with tickets for illegal fish. The last name Wasp, that's kind of cool. So here's what is written. It said, on June 12th, local Jubilee Watch networks were lighting up before sunrise, and residents spotted what was believed to be the year's first event occurring along the Point Clear shoreline. Wasp 66, a lifelong resident of Fairhope and a lifelong enthusiast of the Jubilee, hearkened to the call. In a phone interview on Monday, Wasp said he was excited when he showed up at the Public Bay Access and joined the estimated 70 others already gathering fish. He explained this was the first Jubilee in several years he had made it to before conditions subsided. He said, I got there and I was going to get a fish for Father's Day fish fry. I didn't come for no trouble. I went to a jubilee, he told Lanyap. But it would be Wasp's first encounter with the game warden during the jubilee and his first time to learn state license regulations and bag limits still applied. Okay. It's something that has been enforced for a while. And this goes back to, I guess, the ignorance of the law is no excuse. Colonel Scott Bannon, director of Alabama Conservation and Natural Resources, Marine Resources Division, told Lanyap five citations were written during the event, which lasted roughly 2 days, with 36 illegal fish confiscated for either being under length, which is 14 on a flounder, or in excess of the per day per person limits, which is five. Each citation carries a $50 fine. Okay, so there's the, because it wasn't just the one, it wasn't just the one ticket written. Said while multiple people were issued citations, Bannon said Wasp, quote, didn't think the rules applied to him, end quote. He said Wasp was taken into custody after because he became combative with the state game warden, who court filings identify as Officer Chance Mancuso, a 7-year veteran with Marine Resources. Jail records, now this, I don't know, any of y'all can help me. I don't know that I've ever heard anybody going to jail during a jubilee. This is the first one. It said jail records show Wasp was charged with disorderly conduct, resisting arrest, and attempting to elude. Additionally, two tickets written for Wasp allege he had taken 30 flounder, all under the 14-inch slot, and 25 more than the daily state bag limit. Right, so there's on both. So they and there's a bunch of narrative you can where they talk about Wasp's account of the incident. You can read that on lanyapmobile.com. But it says here, in his retelling of the incident, Wasp claimed he was frustrated with being ticketed, and he ultimately did everything he was asked to do. He said, I complied with the man and everything he said, but he wanted me to shut up and be quiet. I'm not no child. I'm way older than him. I'm going to explain my side and my point of what happened. He didn't want to hear nothing, I got to say. I asked him what I was being arrested for, and he didn't answer me. End quote. Wasp arrest report cites him for disorderly conduct for yelling F-bombs numerous times at a large crowd of people. Wasp said the situation escalated when Mancuso attempted to pepper spray him and he tried to tried avoiding it. So this is where you start getting in the meat of this. This is what I like about old boy here. Said, I've been sprayed with that stuff before and I'm not going to stand still while you spray my face, he said. I like the fact that there's a tell there when you've had previous encounters with pepper spray. The report alleges that Wasp resisted arrest after Mancuso attempted to spray him and claims Wasp refused to comply with further commands and tried to pull his hands away and run. Wasp was injured during the incident. Had an unknown civilian stepped in and offered Mancuso assistance at some point, and the two men took him to the ground while attempting to handcuff him. On the ground, Wasp said the officer had him in a chokehold and hit him multiple times. He said a civilian pulled on his arms and dislocated one of his shoulders. Okay, so there's more to it, but if you're thinking about a Cops episode, if you're just watching Cops, right, and this episode came up, would you call your friends and tell them to watch? I would. They said Wasp was taken and booked into Baldwin County Jail and released more than 24 hours later on a $4,500 bond. He also will face a $100 fine for his tickets. Wasp, who's retired, said he can't afford a lawyer. I don't think this may be the end of it, but we'll have a discussion of Cops live from Fairhope. If they're looking for a new show to make, I don't know if they have the show anymore, but there it is. But we'll have more discussion about that tomorrow. Paul Feinbaum on the way now.